from Argo, which I thought was going to be a lot higher on everybody's lists except for mine, and we all kind of put it around the same area. We still think it's one of the best movies of the year. I thought it was, Colin and I thought it was the 14th best movie of the year, and Eric thought it was the 12th. So, we're all kind of close on Argo, but still one of the best movies of the year. And that's what we're doing right now. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com. They review movies with me, on Friday nights every week. And now we are doing our annual roundup of the best movies of the year and the worst movies of the year, this year being 2012. And we've done our bottom 10, and we'll go to our top 10. So, but let's do we'll do 20 through 11 right now, just to recap. For me, Nick DiGilio, number 20 is Compliance, 19 The Imposter, 18 God Bless America, 17 The Session, 16 The Perks of Being a Wallflower, 15 The Avengers, 14 Argo, 13 Take This Waltz, 12 Goon, and 11 The Raid Redemption. Colin.
My number 20 is Ted, number 19 Killer Joe, 18 Chronicle, 17, Silver Linings Playbook, 16, Compliance, 15, The Master, 14, Argo, 13, Flight, 12, The Gray, and 11, Ruby Sparks.
Eric?
My list, number 20, The Raid Redemption, 19, Silver Linings Playbook, 18, The Impossible, 17, The Invisible War, 16, Cloud Atlas, 15, Paranorman, 14, Compliance, 13, Skyfall, 12 Argo, and 11 West of Memphis.
All right, now it's time to jump into our top 10. And before we do that, actually, we have Jim on the line here with his list for the top 10. Hi, Jim.
Hey, man. How's it going, guys?
Hey, good. Guys. Good.
What's going on? It's a yearly tradition. I got to call in with my top 10.
Rattle off
real quick.
Do it.
All right, number 10 is The Perks of Being a Wallflower. Number 9 is Cabin in the Woods. Number 8 is Silver Linings Playbook. Number 7 is Cloud Atlas. Number 6 is a Canadian film called Café de Flore, which is like Canada's answer to Vanilla Sky. I really thought it was a really unique film. Number 5 is Moonrise Kingdom. Number 4 is this animated film by Don Hertzfeldt called It's Such a Beautiful Day. Number 3 is Take This Waltz. Number 2, Django Unchained. And number 1, by far, Beasts of the Southern Wild.
All right. There you go. Yeah. Good list. Yeah, all right. List. Jim, thanks for calling
thanks
in, man.
Again. Okay. All right. Take care. See you Tuesday.
Yeah. Bye-bye. See you Tuesday. Thanks, Jim. It's Jim, the movie freak and music freak. He'll be at the screening of His Girl Friday on Tuesday night. Interesting choices on there. He mentioned, really quickly, before we jump back into the 10, before we do our top 10, Do we know? We'd have to probably look it up. The short that was before
Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
Paper Man.
Oh, my God.
Oh, you're right.
One of my favorite.
Beautiful. I forgot all about that.
One of my
that.
Favorite 5 minutes of anything I saw all year.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just wanted to, as soon as he said animated, because that's. I mean, seriously, just joyous and beautiful and gorgeous.
And tears in my eyes during it. I mean, just. Oh, I don't think we mentioned it when we talked about
Wreck-It Ralph. No, we did.
We did.
Because I saw it that night. I wanted to make sure that it got mentioned.
It is extraordinary.
Fantastic.
I mean, really, really, really beautiful. When Wreck-It Ralph comes out on DVD, it'll be a part of it, right?
I hope so. Yeah.
It's such a beautiful. If you missed Wreck-It Ralph in the theater, or if you see it in the theater, make sure you get there early enough to see Paper Man, which is before it.
Yeah.
It's seriously just a gorgeous, gorgeous, moving, funny piece of animation.
Wreck-It Ralph comes out March 5th on DVD.
It's so good. I wanted to mention that. That was one of my favorite 5 minutes of footage that I sat through all year was that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, my top 10. And there are, now here's the, this is a very, I was looking at my top 10, and I've got some on here that, like, you guys are probably going to go, what?
I think we all have one or two of those.
Well, I can tell you right now, you're both going to go, what, at this one. Okay. My 10th favorite movie of the year is Cosmopolis.
That doesn't surprise me at all. I actually caught up with that this week, too.
How'd that work out for you?
I thought it was interesting.
No, it wasn't.
I kind of liked it.
Okay.
I'm
going to
turn my mic off.
Is number 10 on my list. This is David Cronenberg's latest in adaptation of Don DeLillo's mesmerizing and strange book of the same title, starring Edward. Robert Pattinson in a role that he was born to play, I think. And Jay, what's his lips again? Is
Barry
in the, he's in it.
Yeah, what's his lips?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's hard to describe this movie, but I will say this: it is one of the most faithful adaptations of anything I've ever seen in my life. It captures DeLillo's... And here's the thing about this movie, is that it's two of the coldest artists in the history of anything working together to make perhaps the coldest movie ever made. I thought this was like a weird companion piece somehow to Videodrome.
It I was going to say Naked Lunch.
Well, there's Naked Lunch in it, but there's like especially the ending is very, very the final moment of the movie is very Videodrome-esque. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the themes are themes that, that DeLillo has gone through, and oddly, and so has Cronenberg. Paul Giamatti shows up in, I think, a fantastic small role at the end of this movie. This movie was greeted with nothing but disdain when it came out. It made no money at the box office. I thought it was terrific. Don DeLillo is one of my favorite writers. He has written one of my favorite books of all time called Underworld. It has nothing to do with vampires and lichen. and Cronenberg always, to me... when he even makes uninteresting films, I think they're pretty great. This one I don't think is uninteresting. I think it's great. I think it's one of the best movies he's done in a long time. So I'm probably the only critic in the country that included this movie on his top 10, but Cosmopolis is on my list, number 10.
I've seen it on a couple lists.
It is shown up.
Okay. My number 10 is The Impossible, which Eric talked about. One of the best disaster sequences ever. Certainly the best one of this year. And there have been quite a few this year.
Hmm.
It's one of the most intense, visceral experiences I've ever had at a movie. When I walked out, I was kind of exhausted and, you know, wiping tears from my cheeks and everything like that. It's, you know, both tsunami sequences in this movie are just amazing. And, you know, Naomi Watts, like you said, Tom Holland, you're right, one of the best child performances we're ever going to see. I don't know. I think this movie is really terrific, and I really like this director, Juan Antonio Bayona, who also did a creepy little movie called The Orphanage a few years
great
ago.
Great film.
So this is a director, you know, to keep your eye on.
Impossible was another one of those movies that I was contemplating, but I had some issues with it, which we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Okay. So go ahead, Eric.
Speaking of surviving disasters, number 10 on my list is Flight. Robert Zemeckis' wonderful return to live-action filmmaking. On the surface, you know, a lot of people commenting about just how adult the movie is. This is his first R-rated film since Used Cars. And it's like, oh, it's so un-Zemeckis-like. When, in fact, it's very Zemeckis in the film. The themes of the movie about God and just a lot of the very familiar themes are thrown out in the movie. And the movie lets you make up your own mind about exactly what's going on and what you're supposed to be rooting for, rooting against. Is God involved? Is he not involved? Has one of the greatest don't do it moments I've ever seen in film. Takes place in a hotel room late in the movie and just sitting there going, don't do it. Just don't do it. And you just let out a breath when you find out the decision. Denzel Washington's best performance, probably since Training Day, easily, maybe even surpassed that. It's a wonderful film. I've seen it three times now, and it continues to really to hit me just how deep and layered the film is, even though some people think it's kind of base, which it's not at all. Yeah,
we'll hear a little more about that. Number 9, Cabin in the Woods, baby.
Again, I thought it was going to be higher.
Cabin in the Woods. I adore this movie. I love it so much from front to back. In a bad year for horror, I got to say. The only thing that's popping into my head outside of this one is Innkeepers.
Mm. Yeah.
And I kind of like Chernobyl Diaries. I thought Chernobyl Diaries was well made. But I can't. If you can think of any other ones, I was looking through my list, and I'm like, what a really bad year for horror.
That might be the best one.
Yeah. There's a movie called Citadel that I liked, but you're right, that's not strong enough to make Cabin in the Woods
to me was just Joss Whedon's, you know, I mean, he didn't direct it. Drew Goddard directed it, but Joss Whedon, you know, he wrote the screenplay with him, and it's got Joss Whedon written all over it. It's very meta. I think it's just a loving, awesome salute to geeks who love horror movies. That's what this movie is. It's a love letter to geeks who love horror movies. It takes on every cliche, every genre. The best thing about this movie despite the fact, besides the fact that it's absolutely hilarious, it's wonderfully gory and really imaginative, is that you never, ever, ever know where the hell it's going. And you can't say that about a lot of movies. With it, in the first 5 minutes of the movie, I'm like, what the hell's going on? And then I kept saying that and kept saying that as it went on. The last 10 minutes of this movie just is phenomenal.
Agreed.
There's a cameo at the very end that's fantastic. There's scenes with elevators opening, blood, things explode. It just makes me happy, this movie. I absolutely love Cabin in the Woods, my 9th favorite movie of the year.
My number 9 isn't a horror movie, but it's about a horror movie. It's a documentary called Room 237,
mm-hmm.
About the movie The Shining. And six people.
You know what? I didn't see this movie.
Not a lot of people did. I don't think it ever got a Chicago release.
It's not been released. We only got screeners of it.
Yeah. So it's still considered a 2012 movie. And, you know, it's basically six people and their interpretations of The Shining. You never see the six people. You just hear them through voiceover. And it's brilliantly edited together. Some of the interpretations of the movie The Shining are so out there. They're so loopy and so absurd. The best one is a guy who thinks his interpretation is so dead on that the government is after him. They want him for questioning. It's a fascinating film about not just The Shining, but about movies in general and how we interpret them and how we have conversations about them and how we, you know, there's a documentary called The People versus George Lucas came out a couple of years ago that sort of posed the question, who owns art, the artists or the people or the public, you know, who interprets the art? And this movie sort of expounds upon that question in a different way, but I think in a pretty brilliant way.
Okay.
So Room 237.
All right. Number 9, Eric.
Number 9 on my list is The Gray. And this is a film that really jumped up on my list when I saw it again a second time last night. For all you Life of Pi people out there who are just drowning in your little interpretations of the spirituality of that film, give this one a spin, if you will, because while on the surface it is a survival story, a really great survival adventure story about seven guys survive a plane crash and then are braving the elements, very cold elements, and being hunted by wolves, it's also an incredible meditation on death and waiting to die and how you are going to feel about dying and just the experience of dying, period. I mean, there, like Colin said, it does play like a top 10 list of how he doesn't want to die, and for all of us, because there are just amazing, you know, not amazing is the wrong word, but just horrific ways to die in this movie. And yet the film has this sort of this uplifting quality to it, even though while it's sort of really sort of pressing down on you that things are just not going to go well for these people involved. So really give this film a look. I think it is might be the most spiritual film of the year, The Gray.
Another one that I had on my list and didn't quite make it.
So good.
Number 8 on my list is Killer Joe. I loved this movie, and I hated the play. I saw the play when it first opened in 1992. With Michael Shannon in the role that Emil Hirsch has in the film. And the dude who plays the leprechaun in the Austin Powers movies played Killer Joe in the... you know who I'm talking about?
The leprechaun. There was
like
played
the Irish...
Chicago cab guy?
Yes.
Yes.
Paul Dillon.
Paul Dillon.
Yeah,
there
he
you
played
go.
The he played the role that that McConaughey had in the film. I thought Friedkin directed the hell out of this movie. It's stunning. It's weird. It's like hillbilly noir is another great way to put it. Shamelessly rolls in mud and dirt and slime for 90 minutes, and I loved every second of it. There's a scene, an outrageous scene that you mentioned involving a chicken leg that is probably the most memorable scene of the year in some ways. And I got to tell you, I saw it by myself at a crowded theater the weekend it opened on a Saturday night after I'd gotten off the air, and I went. I saw it at the Century Landmark, and I was laughing my ass off during that whole scene. And I thought, because I was by myself too, so everybody in the room was looking at me like, this guy is clearly insane, and like trying to move away from me. I I love this movie. Thomas Hayden Church is great in it. He's hilarious in it. Gina Gershon is brave and also great in it. Emile Hirsch. And what can you say about Matthew McConaughey? A banner year for my main man.
Yeah.
You know, between this and Bernie and Magic Mike, he had a great, great year. And I can't wait to see the movie he did with
Mudd.
With Nichols. Yeah. I can't wait to see that. So anyway, I love Killer Joe. It's not for everybody, clearly, but it's like a really sickening hillbilly soap opera with a stunning blackout ending.
Yes.
Yep.
That's when I started laughing.
Oh, I was laughing during that, and then it took me over the
top. Yes.
And I sat there giggling like an idiot during the final credits of this movie. I loved Killer Joe. So Killer Joe's number 8 on my list. Colin.
My number 8 is another McConaughey movie, and that's Bernie. Richard Linklater's wonderful little comedy about murder in a small town. But what really I love about this movie is Jack Black. And
he's great.
I don't always love Jack Black. In fact, a lot of times he drives me nuts. And I never thought I'd watch a movie where he disappeared so, thoroughly into a role that I forgot that I was watching a Jack Black performance.
I think at this point Richard Linklater should just direct him. He should be the only director to
I mean, why not? But, I mean, it's also, I mean, one of the brilliant things Linklater does in this movie is he employs real-life testimonials from people who really knew the real-life Bernie. And I think that's a great approach to take to this movie because it's a twisted little view of how we view murder in this country. And we sort of take it on a case-by-case basis. You know, yeah, what he did was wrong and horrible. But does he really have to be punished that much, really? You know, and Black is so good, he doesn't make that question easy to answer, So
Bernie's available on DVD, though.
Yes,
it's a really terrific movie. Another one that just missed my list. Okay,
really,
Eric?
8 on my list is The Master, a film that Colin called deceptively simple, which I agree with. But it's the kind of movie that you can watch it one day and you have all the answers, and you watch it the next day and you don't. there's scenes in the movie. It's definitely not the easiest film to watch. I've seen it twice now, and I actually found myself dozing off at the exact same part both times. But was still engrossed in it that I was still listening and content to hear exactly how everything was going to play out in this movie. And like you said, the performances cannot be denied. Amy Adams, obviously getting a lot of praise for her work. One of the trickiest roles of the year, I think. And Joaquin Phoenix is terrific, and Philip Seymour Hoffman. The great thing about Paul Thomas Anderson is that his movies are not meant for one viewing. And this is proof positive of that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number 7 on my list of the top 10 best films of the year is Beasts of the Southern Wild. A wonderful movie, which I know we're going to be hearing more about, and we've already heard about. Just a really tremendous movie about, not necessarily Katrina, but about a small place in Louisiana that gets flooded, and about this incredible relationship between this sick father and his young daughter, played by a 6-year-old actress whose name I can't pronounce. Quvenzhané Wallace, who is just extraordinary in this movie. It's magical, it's touching, it's funny, it's real. It's a terrific movie. I know we're going to hear more about it. So number 7 on my list is Beasts of the Southern Wild. Colin?
My number 7 is The Avengers, the highest grossing movie of the year, and it earned every dollar as far as I'm concerned. Joss Whedon, I think, achieved the impossible with this thing, which is he had all these characters, he had all this mayhem, he had all the money in the world to make this movie. 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it never once feels overlong or bloated. It's consistently entertaining and engaging and spectacular, and just one pure summer movie popcorn joy.
Yep.
You know, this is what we love about summer movies.
All right. Eric.
Number 7 on my list is Looper. Ryan Johnson's just wonderfully twisty science fiction tale. I think the best science fiction movie since Inception from a few years ago. Just wonderful stuff. Starts off one direction, this really sort of twisty time travel thing. Then really becomes a really sort of touching story about motherhood and family and the loss and the directions that our lives take. The second viewing of this movie really put it over the top for me. I'm a big fan of this movie. Looper, just out on DVD and Blu-ray just this past week. So check that one out.
All right. Well, we're going to go back and we will tell you, we'll give you a a rundown here. We're at number six. We got the six best movies to tell you about, but we got the news coming up, and we'll jump right back into the list and take your phone calls at 312-981-7200. Worst movies are coming up as well, and a whole bunch of subcategories. Nick DiGilio here on the Voice of Chicago 720 WGN. We are doing the best movies of the year right now, and Eric and Colin are here, and we're starting off with our number six movie of the year. Number six on my list is Paranorman.
How'd that happen? That's a coincidence.
Paranorman is number six on my list.
And that song was from Paranorman.
Yes, that song was from Paranorman.
Love it.
Beautiful at the end credits. I adore this movie. It's not only, you know, obviously my favorite animated film of the year. I was completely moved by it. I identified with it way too much. I think the Paranorman character is like one of the sweetest characters of the year. I thought it was really, really funny and really sweet and really creepy in a good way, like in a really good way. I found it very touching, too. There's a climax in this movie that I don't want to give anything away, but there's this scene where Paranorman confronts this little girl, and it's both heartbreaking and scary and moving, like, and really, and all at the same time. You can't argue the animation here. This is time-consuming, incredible animation. And I love this studio. I love what they do. And I think Paranorman is just a wonderful, wonderful movie. Best kids movie of the year, best animated movie of the year, and one of my very favorites. And it was a real personal joy for me to watch this movie the four times I've seen it.
Amen.
My number six is The Invisible War. For my money, the best documentary of the year. Eric mentioned it. This is the movie where about the women in the military who were raped and abused. Not just women, though. There were actually a couple men in this movie, too, were also raped. But basically about how, you know, their cases were ignored by everybody. And, you know, it's kind of a movie about the fine print that you never see when, you know, you see those recruitment films and, you know, commercials for you to, you know, sacrifice your, you know, everything and join the army and fight for the greater good. But, you know, there's unfortunately a bad side to that, that, you know, comes from all ranks, in our country. So it's a good movie. It's going to make you angry. But you should definitely see it.
Yeah. Terrific film. Didn't make my list, but it's a terrific film nonetheless.
From a movie that makes you angry to a movie that made me absolutely happy, my number six is The Avengers. When a good friend of mine asked me to text him exactly what I thought of the movie when I was over, I texted him one word, and that word was perfect. That's all that needs to be said about the movie. It's one of the most perfect superhero movies. It's just for pure superhero goodness,
and it made all three of our lists. The Avengers, yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's move on to number five. We're top five movies of the year. Number five has been mentioned. Silver Linings Playbook is number five on my list. I loved this movie. I love what David O. Russell does when he does actual David O. Russell movies, not necessarily. And I like The Fighter very much. I did. I love The Fighter, but this to me, like, this is the deal. This is what David O. Russell does the best. I thought the acting was tremendous. I can't say enough about Robert De Niro, who, seriously, it was like I was watching this movie, and I'm like, oh, whoa, that's right. He can still act.
Yep.
Hasn't been doing that in a long time, but he still can. Jennifer Lawrence is awesome in it. Bradley Cooper is great. It's funny. It's quirky. It's moving. I think it could have been predictable, and it has all the elements where it could have been predictable, but I don't think it was. I think it avoided all of that, and I love the characterizations and the relationships, the family stuff. I think it's great. Fifth favorite movie of the year, Silver Linings Playbook.
My number five is Zero Dark Thirty, which we talked about at length last night, so I won't say too much more about it. I'll just say, of all the 2.5-hour epics out there, this is the one that doesn't feel as long as it is, and when it was over, I wanted to see it again. Just top-notch direction from Catherine Bigelow and, you know, Jessica Chastain, I think, gives a great performance. You know, like I said, I don't want to say too much more. We might hear about it again, maybe. Mm-hmm. Zero Dark Thirty is my number five.
Okay, Eric?
Five on my list has also already been mentioned, Beasts of the Southern Wild, which would have been my favorite movie at Sundance if I had seen it there. But catching up with it is anytime you can catch up with this movie, you should. It's beautiful. It's magical. It's heartbreaking. It's tremendous performances from Kevanjane Wallace. Did I get that right?
There you go.
Thank you. Yes. And Dwight Henry, two people who have never acted before. Ben Zeitlin's.
One of whom was like five when they shot the movie.
Right, exactly. Yeah. The ending of this movie just made me tear up uncontrollably when I watched it last time. So Beasts of the Southern Wild, it's a wonderful movie.
Okay. Number four on my list is Moonrise Kingdom, Wes Anderson's wonderful, quirky coming-of-age movie featuring an incredible cast, two young actors that were magnificent, and a cast of stars that I think turn in remarkably funny and awesome performances. Edward Norton, Bruce Willis, Frances McDormand, Bill Murray. It's just, I think it's a great movie. I happen to like when a movie is very Wes Anderson-y. I like that.
I like this movie.
I don't.
From the first 3 seconds of the movie, like for the opening credits, I was like, I'm going to enjoy this. I think he makes great films. I think this is, in fact, the best movie he's made since The Royal Tenenbaums. I've seen it 3 times, and I like it even more every single time I see it. I know that he can divide people, Wes Anderson. I'm in the unbelievably pro Wes Anderson camp. So number four on my list is Moonrise Kingdom.
My number four is been mentioned before. It's Take This Waltz. And I'd still like to know where all the other critics were on this film. I don't understand it. No love, no support, no attention, really. And it's an extraordinary movie from someone who's becoming an extraordinary director, Sarah Polley. Michelle Williams turns in another fearless, flawless performance. Rogan and Sarah Silverman turn in great dramatic performances, you know, two unlikely people you would think to do that. The final montage sequence to this movie, to the title song, Take This Waltz, is just a big punch in the gut. And one thing I noticed the second time I saw it, the cinematography in this movie is exceptional.
Extraordinary.
From a guy who just came out of nowhere. I can't remember his name, but really
it's
caught my
shot.
Eye the second time I saw it.
It is beautifully shot. Okay.
Number four on my list is The Perks of Being a Wallflower. And I think even more than The Avengers or any superhero comic book movie that you could come out with this year, this probably really resonated more with white male film critics than anything else. It's the best movie about being a teenager since The Breakfast Club. It's a film that deals with all variety of issues from crushes to isolation to to being that new kid on the block. This twist that Sergio referred to, it's all part of the angst, and it's the part of the emotional scars that high school leaves with you, and whether it comes from an extreme place like it does in this movie, or it does just sort of just going through the 4 years. The Perks of Being a Wallflower, Nick called this one.
Yeah.
He really, really called this one. And this movie hit me hard about 4 times throughout the movie. And just subtle things. A toast in the movie, had me almost in tears.
Yeah.
So The Perks of Being a Wallflower is my number four.
All right, my number three, and there are going to be a lot of people who are going to be very, very surprised when I say the title of my number three movie. The Master is number three on my list.
Surprise!
It's Paul Thomas Anderson. I believe everybody who's known me and anybody who's listening right now figured, that'll be number one. The Master will be number one.
Yep.
I got to say that my top three movies any of the year could have been number one. I love all three of these movies almost equally. I think The Master is an amazing film. I've seen it 5 times. I think Paul Thomas Anderson is an extraordinary filmmaker, as we all know. He's my favorite filmmaker of all time. It's a very tricky movie. It's a very difficult movie. I just happen to admire two more movies just a little bit more than this one. So The Master is number three.
Okay, my number three might also surprise some people who know me. My number three is Beasts of the Southern Wild. A friend of mine, I had some friends over to watch this movie, and a friend of mine said, I felt like I could smell this movie. it's such a vivid portrayal of a very specific place in our country that nobody would ever probably think to make a movie. But he did, this guy, Ben Zeitlin did. And at times it just kind of feels like a documentary in a way, it didn't have to touch up any art direction or anything like that. I think they just kind of filmed this place as it was. And he's a great new voice. And he says he's going to keep making movies in Louisiana. And I look forward to anything else he does. And the two actors in it who are going to be in the next Steve McQueen film. The slavery film. So that's what you're going to see then.
There you
next.
Go. So, okay, next. Three.
I guess number three is reserved for the spot for, you know, where we're going to surprise everyone in the room. Number three on my list is The Dark Knight Rises. I think the extraordinary final chapter to Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy. If Star Wars was the trilogy of my youth, then this Dark Knight trilogy is the one of my adulthood. I think it's just exceptional filmmaking all around. What he's done with this character and with this mythology, I think is nothing short of a miracle in a way. A true trilogy and a superhero story rooted in reality for our times. It's a very rare accomplishment, I think, and I think it's one that's going to be attempted to be copied many times, but I don't think it will come even close to being duplicated. So The Dark Knight Rises, number three on
okay.
the list.
Number two on my list is Zero Dark Thirty, which was mentioned earlier. Catherine Bigelow's extraordinary film we talked in detail about last night. Great filmmaking. I actually liked it. I think I liked it even more than The Hurt Locker. Catherine Bigelow is one of my favorite directors of all time. And as you'll see, one of the reasons why these other two movies were chosen over The Master is simply because of sometimes it's just because of your track record, I think, as you'll find out. But Zero Dark Thirty is an extraordinary piece of work. It just hit the theaters this weekend. Everybody knows what it's about. It's about the hunt for Osama bin Laden, featuring, I think, some amazing performances, some really intense sequences. Beautiful film, Zero Dark Thirty.
My number two is Paranorman. The best animated film I've seen since WALL-E, and I'm not going to repeat everything you said, but
I agree with that, by the way. Agree with that statement.
And I agree with everything you already said about it, so I won't repeat it. But I just think these guys, Laika, the studio, they do what Pixar does best, which is they go to that extra mile for every little detail in the frame. Every time you watch it, you notice something new. And it's all, I think it's a great movie for kids about bullying, a much
Absolutely.
More effective
oh,
movie about bullying
than
that documentary Bully that came out.
Yep.
It's got a lovely score by John Bryan, and I think this is just great, ambitious animation and great filmmaking.
Agree with you.
Amen.
All right, number two.
Number two on my list is Sarah Polley's Take This Waltz. And if there's any movie that just completely broke my heart, last year, this year, and every time I've seen it since, it's this one. Tremendous work from Michelle Williams. Seth Rogen, I think, is really good in the movie. Has the most stunning. There are like three montages in this movie. Two of them set to "Video Killed," the radio star which we played earlier. That song has been changed forever in my head. I could go on forever about this movie and what the critics missed about it. Colin mentioned Ruby Sparks, sort of a take on the twist on romantic comedies. This movie shoots it right in the face, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, this isn't a comedy, though.
Well, I know, I'm not, but I'm saying that it's a totally
different genre.
But it takes the idea of you're in one relationship, but there's that sort of that extra mile, you know, it's that Tom Hanks, okay. Sleepless in Seattle kind of thing that's out there waiting for you. You know, this movie shoots that in the face, is what I'm saying.
It shoots Sleepless in Seattle in the face.
In
gotcha.
The face.
Okay, all right. Okay.
All right, number one, my favorite movie of the year is Robert Zemeckis' Flight. I can't even explain to you how much I love this movie and how much I love the fact that he came back with a movie like this. Robert Zemeckis is one of my favorite filmmakers of all time. He's directed certified masterpieces. You know, the only films that he's directed that I'm not too crazy about, wasn't too crazy about The Christmas Carol, and I'm not too crazy about Death Becomes Her. Everything else he's directed, I really like. I liked Beowulf a lot. I like Polar Express. I'm glad he's back doing the live action. Denzel Washington, for my money, best performance of his career, best performance of the year. This movie is about so much more than what people say it's about. Eric, you touched on so much of it. There's a lot about fate. There's a lot about faith. A lot of the stuff that Zemeckis has touched on before. To me, it seems like the most vital movie that he's made in years. Like, he's back. And he's one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, and I think he knocked it out of the damn park with this movie. I loved every frame of Flight, my favorite movie of the year.
Okay, my number one, is because I'm a white male film critic, is The Perks of Being a Wallflower. You guys have already mentioned everything about it, so again, I'm not going to echo it, but yes. Nothing, unlike any other movie this year, I mean, nothing took me back to a specific time and place the way this movie did. to the point where I really felt like I was on the same journey as these characters. It reminded me of, you know, everything from my youth. And I think the movie captures a spirit of being a teenager and just being alive, having that sort of feeling of being alive that you don't really get at any other point in your life. And I think this movie captures it. I think the guy who wrote it, Steve Chbosky, I think he's, you know, reminds me of the best of Cameron Crowe and James L. Brooks when those guys are at their best. The performances are all outstanding. I loved each and every one of these people. Again, cinematography, criminally underrated, as is the editing and the score. And, you know, when I was done, when it's over, I feel like this is my movie. You know, this is the one I'm going to go to more and more.
All right, number one, Eric.
Number one is a film that has not been mentioned tonight, and I thought it would be on at least one list, and it's Steven Spielberg's Lincoln. Watching this film the second time, it encapsulated me just how unbelievable Tony Kushner's script is to this movie. Perfectly balanced all the way throughout. Daniel Day-Lewis gives the best performance, male performance of the year for my my taste. It's a movie that's either going to inspire you to get into politics or stay the hell away from it. It's a wonderful story about history, and there's so many nuances in this movie. It makes you want to go out and learn more about Lincoln and about the process of government, and you know, just everything that went on in that went on in that period during his presidency. It's a pretty stunning motion picture. I'm really surprised it wasn't on anyone else's list.
Yeah. Number 21.
It was in
the 30.
I didn't know where this movie was going to rank, and then I watched it again, and it just seemed a no-brainer to me that this was the best movie I saw.
Now, we don't have time to go through a recap because we're running out of time, but we are going to post all these on our Facebook page, your lists and my list. Okay, let's do the worst. Here we go. Top 15 worst movies of the year, and I'm going to fly through them. 15, Les Miserables. 14, Snow White and the Huntsman. 13, Rock of Ages. 12, The Raven. 11, The Dictator. 10, Total Recall. 9, A Thousand Words. 8, This Is 40. 7, Tyler Perry's Medea's Witness Protection. 6, Red Dawn. 5, Prometheus. 4, A Liar's Autobiography. 3, The Devil Inside. 2, That's My Boy. And 1, the worst movie of the year, Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. Colin.
All right, 15, Joyful Noise. 14, Safe. 13, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. 12, That's My Boy. 11, Red Hook Summer. 10, Parental Guidance. 9, A Thousand Words. 8, This Means War. 7, The Devil Inside. 6, What to Expect When You're Expecting. 5, One for the Money. 4, A Little Bit of Heaven. 3, High School. 2, The Apparition. And number 1 is also Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie.
Eric.
Okay, number 15, Alex Cross. Number 14, Gone. Number 13, A Liar's Autobiography. Number 12, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. Number 11, Jack and Diane. Number 10, Fun Size. Number 9, Playing for Keeps. Number 7, What to Expect When You're Expecting. Number 6, Project X. Number 5, One for the Money. Number 4, number 5, The Apparition. 4, Tomorrow When the War Began. 3, 2016, Obama's America. 2, Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie. And number 1, High School.
Okay, here we go. Let's do our subcategories real quick. Best or funniest gag for me, Bags on the Head in Django Unchained.
Paul Rudd's improv in front of the mirror in Wanderlust.
Okay. That's mine, too.
All right. Best lines of dialogue or favorite lines of dialogue? My favorite line of dialogue is, I can't say what it is, but Jessica Chastain says it during a meeting during Zero Dark Thirty.
Yes.
When they ask who she is.
Yes.
From Ted, I'm so glad you're here. And the other guy, and I won't give it away, says, my daughter better be alive, you sick SOB.
Okay.
Mine is, we accept the love we think we deserve from the Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Right. Best fight, Hulk and anyone, and the Mandingo fight in Django.
The hotel fight scene in Ted.
The three-wave battle in The Raid.
Best movie that didn't deserve to bomb, Cosmopolis.
Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
You Must Stop Making Movies Award, Tim and Eric.
Tim and Eric.
Timur Bekmambetov.
Best Ensemble, Moonrise Kingdom.
Argo.
Lincoln.
Best brainless movie, The Raid and Premium Rush tied.
Casa de mi Padre.
Premium Rush.
Worst smart film, Les Mis, tied with To Roam with Love.
Red Hook Summer.
Life of Pi.
Let's see. A movie that made the hungriest, Gerald Dreams of Sushi.
Take This Waltz and Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Take This Waltz is a good one. I put The Hunger Games.
Most underrated critically, The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Ruby Sparks.
Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Biggest Surprises, Me Liking the Guilt Trip.
Jack Black and Bernie.
Liberal Arts.
Biggest Disappointment, Killing Them Softly and The Raven.
Yeah, Killing Them Softly and Brave.
The Hobbit and Brave.
Biggest Waste of an Actor or Actress, Albert Brooks and This Is 40.
Emma Stone in Amazing Spider-Man.
Jennifer Lawrence in House at the End of the Street.
Best action scene, anything in The Raid.
Whole last sequence of The Avengers.
Yep, final half hour of The Avengers.
Most romantic scene is the ending of a 5-year engagement.
Oh,
that's good,
a good one. Emma Watson giving Logan Lerman his first kiss in Perks.
First kiss, Perks.
Worst remake or movie based on a TV show, Red Dawn.
Total Recall.
Red Dawn.
Sexiest shot or moment, Kerry Washington in 1,000 Words.
Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence dancing in Silver Linings Playbook.
This is crazy. Jennifer Lawrence dancing in
you
Silver Linings Playbook.
You guys are weird,
playbook,
man. Best cinematographers, Zero Dark Thirty.
Skyfall.
Skyfall.
Best use, best score, The Master.
Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Beasts of the Southern Wild.
Best use of music, Flight.
Heroes in Perks.
Video Killed the Radio Star and Take the
Favorite Waltz. Tearjerker moment, the end of the sessions.
The final scene, one of the final scenes in Beasts of the Southern Wild. I won't give it away.
Reuniting of the kids with their dad in The Impossible.
Favorite bad movie, 21 Jump Street.
Step Up Revolution.
Taken 2.
Worst actor, Ty, Tim, and Eric.
Adrian Brody High School.
Oh, Tyler Perry, Alex Cross.
Worst actress, whoever, whatever that chick's name is in Rock of Ages.
Julianne Hough.
Awful. Yeah.
Katherine Heigl, One for the Money.
Julia Roberts, Mirror, Mirror.
Most overrated, whatever it is, Les Mis.
Rust and Bone.
Moonrise Kingdom.
Best monologue, Leo's monologue in Django.
The first time Lincoln explains to his cabinet why the amendment is so important to him in Lincoln.
I got Daniel Day-Lewis doing the Euclid speech in Lincoln.
Yeah. Most nail-biting moment, the plane crash in Flight.
Crossing the river in Gray.
The river in Gray.
Yeah. Most stomach-churning moment, the chicken leg scene in Killer Joe.
I was going to say, Naomi Watts' leg wound in The Impossible.
Oh, God, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I put Killer Joe chicken.
Another annoying phenomenon, assigned seats continues to be a number one.
I put 48 frames per second on The Hobbit.
Oh, good okay. one. Yeah. Indie filmmakers who think they can make films with minimal dialogue and storylines.
Best DVD or Blu-ray, Jaws.
Jaws.
Yeah.
Best use of 3D, Life of Pi.
Yeah, the switching aspect ratios in Life of Pi.
Prometheus.
Worst or most awkward casting choice, Kristen Stewart in Snow White and the Huntsman.
Tyler Perry, Alex Cross.
Best kill or death, the merman scene in A Cabin in the Woods.
Tarantino's in Django Unchained.
Could say you could pick one from The Raid, but not a death scene, but Hulk and Loki in The Avengers.
Okay. Film you would like to see a sequel to right now, Paranorman.
Paranorman.
The Avengers.
No more sequels, please. Resident Evil and Underworld.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Ice Age.
Character you most want to hang out with, Sean William Scott and Goon.
Ted.
Emma Watson, Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Best ending or very final moment, Killer Joe.
Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Dark Knight Rises.
Weakest ending, Devil Inside.
I didn't see it. The Apparition.
The Innkeepers.
The movie that you don't remember seeing, the title offers no clue, it's That Forgettable Joyful Noise.
Unforgivable.
Oh, that's a foreign film.
What?
Okay. The Cold Light of Day.
Best retro film-going experience, all of my film clubs.
Joe versus Volcano at Ebert Fest.
Used Cars at your film club.
Okay. And best regards with what you learned in 2012, lots of bad horror movies is what I've learned in 2012.
And I don't need 48 frames per second footage of hobbits eating to know that they're really eating.
There you go. Boy, we did that in record time. Wow. All right, that was fun, you guys. Again, we'll post all three lists on our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. There you go. And you can check out the lists there. And if you have comments, leave them on our Facebook page as well.